Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio Community News. Joining me tonight are Dave Morris. Say hi, Dave.
Hello.
Kevin Wisher, who I don't think is going to be talking, and Morgellon, the low-tech mystic. How are you doing, Morgellon? Who is having problems with his audio as we speak. So, as we usually do here on HPR, we would like to welcome the new members to HPR that joined us last month, and that was one person, and that was Alex Gregoria. I should have had you do that, Dave.
Gregorian, Alex Gregorian, I think it is.
Okay. Good show, and nice to have him on board. Right, last month we ended up with episode 1261, which was HPR Community News, and that was followed by Mr. Dan Washko with the Who command. Any surprises here for you, Dave?
No, that's one command I do know. Dan usually got lots of surprises. This one I did actually know.
Well, actually, that one caught me up because I didn't know where the database was and stuff like that. So that was a very handy one to know.
No, it was good. It was, as usual, lots of information.
Then the following day, we had HPR 1263, which was 3G Tunnels S Shuttle. Timotim and NY Bill chat about 3G connectivity. I loved this show. I had not a clue about this, and I definitely have it on my list to try. I think also there is a request from Pokey for actually he's looking more for a VPN solution, but this is seems like a very nice SSH proxy type solution. The next day we had a very, very, very delayed show recorded by me at the OgCamp 11. And just to give you an explanation of what happened here, it was that shows were not reserved at the time. Anyway, the fact is I didn't schedule the shows on time, and there was a year and a half delay in getting these shows out, more like 2 years. And this was Open Accessibility with Steve Lee, which I think is an interesting topic for many here on HPR.
Yeah, it's very relevant to quite a lot of stuff we've heard in the intervening time, isn't it? Shame it was late, but that sounds like I'm getting at you there, but not. But
I am. I'm just so embarrassed with this, and I can't apologize enough. The following day, we had Sigflub mitigating SQL injection and other messaging protocols attacks through compiler signatures. And yet again, Sigflub makes me feel like the techno ant that I am. She is a tower of genius, making all of us seem like dwarfs.
Yeah, I can't but agree with that.
Sorry, I don't mean to offend dwarfs here. I just dwarfing us with her. And it seems, I just hacked together something here to messaging protocols against SQL attacks. If you are doing SQL hardening anywhere, I strongly suggest you listen to this episode 3 or 4 times like I did and consider implementing this.
Yeah, Sigflub's got amazing insight into compilers and how they work, and she's using her great skills to come up with these ideas. Very impressive.
Very much so. Okay, the next day was Talk Geek to Me News. This time it was Dan Moshko and Deep Geek. And then Ahuka, who is going to be the backbone of HPR for the coming period of time, doing every fortnight now a LibreOffice series. And this was episode 04, Writer Styles and Properties number 1. I'm loving these very, very much and should be required listening for anybody who sits down in front of a computer, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yes. I would strongly recommend sitting in front of a LibreOffice instance while listening to it. I certainly found it helpful myself to wander through everything and look at the dialogue boxes, etc. But no, it's very, very good.
Then we had David Whitman with What's in My Bag? And this is a series started by Dave Yates some time ago. And, you know, just describes your daily carry, all the technical stuff that all the stuff that you carry around with me. I thought this was fantastic. I was also shocked at the amount of stuff he has in his bag, the amount of this is my this and my that, and he just kept going on and on and on. The poor man's back must be broken.
Yes. I was lost for words, really. It was just amazing. Have a bag.
Yeah, I'd like to do one of these myself, but I was looking at my own bag, and I do carry around the whole go of stuff in it, but I never use it. The only thing I use really is my laptop. Actually, I need to do that episode, and you'll probably be hearing that shortly. At the rate we're going with shows. Then we had the much requested Frank Bell Enlightenment Adventures E17 Part 2, and then that was followed the next day by a special request for a show date by John Culp, which was an interview with his dad for Father's Day, which we released on the Friday before Father's Day. So that was a very nice touch and a very, very interesting interview, I must say.
Yeah, I love that. It's I wrote a short email to John saying that was congratulating him on the show and of sending good wishes to his father. It sounds like quite a hacker in his own right.
I think they were quite worried at the beginning whether it was going to be of interest to hackers, and it definitely was. It was. I could have listened to that man talk, both of them talk, and I really envied the father-son relationship going on there, I must say. And then we had all I can say is a Lost and Bronx style essay, really, on Out of Style or Retro Chic by Nightwise, re-looking at some of the technology and looking to see whether should we simplify our lives and really use some of our old gadgets that are perfectly good.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice point of view he had there. I should say that I've just been going through a process, because I like using MP3 players, and they conk out after a while. I'm now up to about my fourth generation of these things, and I thought, I'm not going to buy another one. I'm going to scour eBay and grab some old ones that will take Rockbox. And so it was just, I was just in the middle of that when I heard this episode. I thought, wow, I must, it's the message he was sending there, I thought was very, very profound.
It was quite apt, actually, because I was cleaning the cellar of all my computer kit as part of a major project, like changing a light bulb, and to change the light bulb you need to do this, and to change that you need to do that. But I had just like a whole big bag full of obsolete computer equipment, and because of his show I went back out to the bag and, you know, resalvaged a few things that I thought, no, I can't throw these away, I really have to do this project. But actually, with the whole Raspberry Pi now coming along, I find it hard to justify running a big server, you know, when I can run something a little less powerful, maybe using a lot less power.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Which if you assume that, then you don't need PCI cards. You don't need, VGA cards. You just got everything's on the Raspberry Pi. So it makes a lot of technology obsolete, really, as such.
True.
Then, to my shame, Nathan Dumont on open source hardware, and I hope that he did mention on Twitter that
Hang
in
on.
Light of the Raspberry
Ken,
Pi.
Did
oh,
you,
sorry,
did
I
you
missed
skip
Kat.
Something
I missed
there?
Kat.
You did. You missed Clat.
Sorry.
You missed Clat. You 1272. You should be on, I think.
Yeah, 1272 was open badges, and he did this with Miss Cupcake. What's her name?
Cyanide
cupcake. Love that handle. Yes. Love that handle. It's cute and deadly. Excuse me while I kill you. This was, they brought up a very good point, and they pretty much nailed it for me. what's the point of these badges? Surely a GitHub repository or a Gitorious repository would be of more merit to people, I guess.
Yeah, my notes here say seemed like a daft idea, but I think they pretty much summed it up.
Yes. And then the following day we had Dan with Kat, and I think there was only one or two things I didn't know about this one. This one I felt cheated, Dan.
I disagree, actually. I did not know you could number things with Kat.
Everyone knew that.
No. Well, you see, I'm so old. It's so ancient that when CAT was invented, they didn't have a number switch on it. So when I learned
back
it... Back in my day, we didn't have number switches. We had to write them in ourselves with a pen.
You are lucky. What would I give
on the screen,
to have
we
a
did
pen?
It. That's right. But I think it's good. There's always CAT... Dan's always opening the lid on these things and showing us stuff that we could find out ourselves if we just went and read the man pages. But
yeah.
When do you? I mean, I don't. And
I think that observation was made by Tattoo. You know, he feels like Dan is cheating us all because he's just telling us stuff that's already there. But hey, we're audio listeners. We're audio learners, folks. That's why we listen to podcasts.
So yeah, absolutely.
If somebody's going to go to the trouble of doing a podcast, writing up excellent show notes that are readable, unlike many of the man pages, in fairness, which he reads, and doing a video on top of that, you know, he's covered all the bases. There is no
Absolutely.
Excuse not to know the commands.
Man pages can be amazingly impenetrable, and Dan's translated them in many cases. It's great. No, I can't fault him.
No. Well, not for that. I can fault him for many other things, but not for that. Geo, whatever, springs to mind.
Draw a veil quickly.
Nathan Dumont on open source hardware. And again, this is a pity that this one has taken so long, because in the intervening time, there's been a lot of stuff done with Raspberry Pis. And at the time they came out, I thought they would be not complementary, but I've seen many, many projects that use Pis in combination with Arduinos to achieve... very interesting projects.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, there's a series on HPR which has no entries yet, because I have not told anyone that there's a series in HPR and we need a cool name on, you know, how I hacked my Raspberry Pi. So send in stuff.
Then
we had a hookah again with the. Anything else you want to say, Dave? Sorry.
No. Sorry. Go ahead.
And then we had a hookah again with LibreOffice Writer Styles Property 2. I'm not going to go into his shows anymore. They're just tickets as read that you need to listen to these, and you need to follow along. It's required reading. Then one I really put a smile on my face was two Hacker Public Radio hosts meet face-to-face for the first time. How awesome is that?
That's very cool. That was very cool. Pictures too, and a cat.
And the cat. I mean, it's got everything. It's got a cat.
Very good.
No, see, it's brilliant.
It's one of the things I love about Hacker Public Radio and the podcast world in general is that, you know, these insights you get into people and the way that they do things, and you know, it's good. You're just walking around with a bit of hardware in your pocket and a pair of headphones on, and all of a sudden you find out, you know, interesting things like this. I think it's great.
I do have a dream, you know. Of going, you know, doing the Winnebago coast to coast America thing, and you know, it will happen, you know. We will go to Disneyland, of course, or whichever. There are a few things, obviously, but I think my trip will be from one podcaster's home to the next, to the next, to the next. You know, but already Peter 64 has done that. You know, so
yeah.
I'll be just following him in his footsteps.
Absolutely, he covered some ground, didn't he?
Oh yeah, lucky kid. Yes, Ogcamp 11 interview with Marie Alice Assen from Flatter, and again, apologies.
Hang on, Ken, did you skip one again? You skipped
I did.
Clatu,
yes. What am I doing tonight? Anyway, Icecast 102 from Clatu, the much-weighted follow-up to Icecast 101. Both of those are required listening if you're into Icecast.
Yeah, I listened to both of them avidly, but I still haven't fully absorbed all the details. I really want to listen to this again and again and set the damn thing up because it sounds really cool.
Exactly, something that needs to be done. And Pokey's just joined. Say hello, Pokey.
Hello, Pokey.
We're just going through the episodes. We're up to episodes 1277, Icecast 102. Any comments?
Well, sorry I'm late, fellas. Didn't realize what time it was. Had a little bit of crisis at home I had to deal with. The Icecast one was excellent. There's been several lately, whether they were via HPR or a couple other shows that have been on like Icecast and Ices and Butt, and very interesting stuff. And I keep thinking that I should do something with them, and I hope to.
You know, it's like I was telling my kids, as you do, I was telling my wife actually that we could in the neighborhood here put in like a broadcasting thing where you could broadcast out on a low power FM transmitter around the neighborhood and use Icecast to schedule all this stuff. And people, you know, they just take it for granted, these young'uns. You know, this stuff is so cool. Yeah, I just think it's so cool. It's pretty much that. Sorry about it.
It is very cool. I mean, even Mumble, every time I connect to Mumble.
Isn't it awesome?
And you can talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime you want, and all they have to do is install a little piece of software, and it's oh so hard for some people, but most people get it, and then I'd do it. I mean, it wasn't 15 years ago that it still cost you quite a bit of money to call the next town over if it was, you know, out of your area code or something. You know, I mean, at least here it was. It's just crazy.
Here we had to pay for local calls, so you know, we still do. But exactly that. I mean, now my wife has given teaching some kids who are going to migrate to the States, and they're getting English lessons, and they already speak English, and we were just wondering, well, why don't they just go on a Mumble server and talk to some American kids, you know, that hang out, and you know, there's so many resources available. But anyway, that's beside the by the by. Skipping over briefly that I delayed an Oddcast Oddcamp interview with Marie Assen from Flatter for 2 years. But I should have put that out because I really enjoyed that recording, that talking to her was really nice.
It was a great show, that one. I enjoyed that. Flatter's so cool. I was actually contributing, doing my monthly contributions to people as I was listening to it. Coincidentally, it's great. Hey, fantastic. Why doesn't HPR have a Flatter button? By the way, any particular reason?
Because HPR relies on, is solely funded by Stankdog, and Stank doesn't want contributions. But
okay,
if you have money burning in your pocket, please consider supporting the ACF. That's my personal request.
Yeah.
Accessible Computing Foundation by our good friend.
Oh, indeed.
Jonathan Nidu.
Yeah, and Flyin' Rich wants to do something with funding the ACF as well. He's hoping to put together a fundraiser with Jonathan. I don't know the details or if he's published them yet. I'm a little behind on my tilts and all my podcasts, really. But he, it looked like he was trying to get something going.
He was that serious? Because he said he wanted to raise, was it 10 or 100 grand? Something incredibly ridiculous.
He said 100,000, which is reasonable if you're talking about hiring a developer for a year.
No, I get that. And what he said on tilts was, 100,000 would fix all the accessibility issues in Linux.
I think he said in LibreOffice.
Yeah, okay. That, because Jonathan had previously found out how much work there was necessary to do it. It was 40 weeks' work of so many developers. And I guess he has figured out that that's going to be 100,000. But if you look at the fundraiser that we just did and all the plugging we did here on HPR and all the other shows did, and we barely scraped in, what was it, a few grand.
11 or 12.
Yeah. More power to him if he can. You know, I'm right behind him. More power to him if he can.
Yeah, he sounded serious up until that point, and then he said something about, you know, paying to, staying on air until people paid enough, you know, to get rid
exactly
of him. But at that point, I know he was being facetious, so I don't know what he had in mind, but...
Which makes me... Yeah, but... he, you know, let's just see what happens and hope that he does come through with goods.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, the following day was hosted by Alec. And Dave, you'll finish this off for me, please.
Alec Gregorian.
Thank you very much.
Alec, I believe, anyway.
Gregorian. As everybody should know, I'm slightly dyslexic and heavily can't pronounce other people's names. With Russ.
No, you got me. Pavlicek, perhaps?
Okay. Russ Pavlicek. He was also on Tilts about the Zen project. And this was a recording that he made at, I can't remember what the fest was.
It's a Texas something, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Texas Linux Fest.
Linux Fest, yeah.
And that, folks, if you're going along to any of these shows and got a recorder with you, you don't need any special permission to become a HPR host, man of the hour, woman of the hour, person of the hour. You just pick up your recorder and shove it in front of somebody's face and say, yeah, so you're going to do a talk here. Why are you here? And then they have no choice but to talk. Home Antennas by John Kulp, who is on my Christmas card list because he sent in a reserve show. And anybody who has sent in a reserve show gets on my special list. I don't exactly know what that means, but this one was Homemade Antennas for Over-the-Air High Definition TV.
Very good. Very cool.
Nice pictures to go along with it. Actually,
yeah, absolutely. Well. Absolutely. Yeah. Some good links there too. Stuff I didn't know about.
I get it.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say I got to check those pictures out. The episode was really interesting, and I built a couple of really remedial antennas for stuff over the years, and I would like to check the pictures. I didn't realize there were some.
He did a he did a very nice merging of the two channel two antennas for two specific ranges, and then merged them in with a splitter, which I thought was quite interesting. Anyway, the next day we had another show from Nightwise. And Nightwise, although he runs a Nightwise promo for his own podcast, which you definitely should be listening to, was commenting on the Samsung premiere, which is quite funny. But these are shows specifically released for HPR, just so that everybody is completely aware of that. And that also marked the first day where we switched from the previous scheduling system to the new first-in, first-out scheduling system. Then we had. And it also explains why we have so many shows from John Culp in the same week, is because, hey, first come, first served, you got the slots, and there they are. My homemade recumbent bike, which, if you haven't seen the photos, you really need to see the photos as well that go along with this. It's fantastic.
I haven't heard these ones, I'm afraid, Ken.
Oh, sorry. Shall we stop there, or...?
It might be a good idea restrict...
To stop
restrict to a month
for okay, let's do that.
Each community
that,
news might be wiser. I don't know.
Okay, that's
fine, but before we stop, just since we mentioned it, I want to say I love this one. This gets added onto my personal list of my favorite HPR episodes ever. I mean, I don't know how long that list is, I don't limit it to any particular number, but this is on there. I really loved this one. I've ridden a recumbent bicycle before when they were like really, really new in the mid 80s. My uncle came home with one and I tried one out and it was fantastic. And building your own stuff and brazing and all that, I was riveted by this episode. I couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It brought out the mechanical engineer in me. And the Dutch person in me, the handlebars, the recumbent bikes here always have the steering wheel as a pivot underneath the seat.
Much more comfortable that way.
Yeah. But I don't know. Is that normal to have the handlebars like a chopper handlebars?
I would say not. I maybe a third or a quarter of them have the big tall handlebars like that. The ones that I've ever seen on the road. The only one I ever rode had the handlebars under the seat, and most of them that I see have the handlebars under the seat. And I just from riding bicycles and motorcycles and that kind of thing. I would say that the chopper handlebars would probably tend to make your hands fall asleep after a little while, depending on how high they are.
Okay. So that's it pretty much for the shows. So if we want to stop it there, we can. I did make mention that we've switched to the new scheduling system, which is essentially, there's a little done on the website. over the last while. I don't know if anyone noticed it or not.
I checked out a couple of things. It's looking good. I mean, I see small improvements, but I haven't had time to really, you know, dig in. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. All I really did, I wanted to make some sort of change to, because I had done quite a lot of work on the, well, let's go back here. What's happened now is that we've switched to a completely, my page isn't loading for some strange reason. My wife listening to some music. Yes, that would
do it. Oh, it's way different. Look at that. I didn't see that. I looked the last time you asked people to look. I didn't see that all the navigation had moved to the right hand.
You know, just to throw it out there, as somebody who's kind of been gone for four and something odd years.
You're breaking up terribly, man. Start over, please.
Get on the website as that did last night and kind of go through and just to see how much has changed. All you guys deserve some major kudos. There's some awesome work going on. Okay, let me try again. I'll walk outside. I'm on my cell phone. I'm at work. Sorry, guys.
But
what I was going to say is, okay, good. I really haven't been involved with HPR for about 4 years or more. So last night was probably the first time I'd really kind of checked the site. I keep HPR in my feed, but I don't go to the site. And the site has just, it's amazing to see how much it's grown and all the little improvements, and just major kudos to all the work that's gone on there. It's awesome to see such a big change from what it was in my mind the last time I looked at it.
Okay, thanks. Well, actually, from a look and feel point of view, it's pretty much what it was 4 years ago. I just moved. I did a magic piece of CSS now that and moved the menus over to the other side and pretty much everything else from there. However, one of the major changes now is that, and I'll read it from the scheduling rules, HPR scheduling is entirely community-driven. All the shows are scheduled on a strict first-in, first-out basis. Slots will only be allocated once the shows have been successfully processed. Any missing information will result in the show's missing its requested slot. Once a slot has been allocated, it is not possible to move them. Now, what that means is, if you go to the calendar page, as we all do, what you see there is upcoming shows, and we have Friday was 12:85 as we're recording this. LibreOffice writer, but what you see is that the Monday show has already been posted. The Tuesday show is still available, and we will probably post the community news on Tuesday. The Wednesday show is Nido Media and Ken Goes Camping. So what that means is Dave Morris, myself will be on two shows in the 1 week, three shows in my case, two shows in the 1 week, which is entirely allowed now because it is the community, not anybody on the admin mailing list or anybody Stank or anybody else. It is whoever you are. If you pick a show number or a show date in your upload, then that's when the show is going to be released. It's going to be processed and posted as that show on the server immediately. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah, so far so good.
So essentially what you can do is, if we look down the list, HPR 1315, and we're currently at 1285. So 1315 is actually on the web server. If you click the link, you get the show notes for 1315. And using the magic of HTML5, you can press the Listen Now button and you can hear the show.
Mm-hmm. Impressive. Is there a feed for the future ones, Ken, or did you think better of that?
No, I don't. I intend to do it. It's just I don't intend to. I have more pressing things like the FTP upload.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's nice to have the feed.
All right, so I've been under a rock for a little bit, so this might be a stupid question, but
no, it's good because I want people asking questions.
All right, right on. How can you explain to me what's the, all right, so I know the processing has changed and it seems like the uploading has changed as well, is that correct? What are we doing now?
You're still sending it to the FTP server as we speak, and the FTP server password has changed.
So okay, I did know that.
Okay.
And I know that we still prefer FLAC, but we'll accept any format that someone can produce. Yep. Is that still correct?
Yep, that's still correct.
Okay, and the file wants to be accompanied by a by the show notes.
Yes, text file, show notes, yes.
A text file, okay. And you want that with HTML tags if possible?
No, I don't.
No, okay.
No. First of all, I want the FLAC. If you've got a FLAC file or a WAV file, a FLAC is fine. If you've got a FLAC file, put the intro and outro into it, yeah, if you want. I would prefer it if you did.
Okay.
And then I would prefer it if you sent a text file with links, because HTML is tricky to write, and the HTML that we're using needs to fit into other HTML, so it gets more complicated. So if you know what you're doing with HTML, that's fine, send it to me. But what ends up happening is I get HTML that's got lots of errors in it, and then I spend more time correcting the HTML than it would have taken me if it was just simply given to me as a text file. Because we can't use links like here is the link to, and the link to the picture is here. Yeah, because when that's rendered on players that even support HTML, all they'll see is here, H-E-R-E. So we have to go the rend, and it's linked here to this http://example.com/mypicture.jpg. And then that allows text-based pod rendering, podcast renderers to display the show notes, and they will interpret that link as a link, and that's clickable. So it's stuff like that just makes it more difficult for me to edit to get the show notes together, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get that.
But if you do know HTML, then that's fine. If you're going into a WYSIWYG editor and you're formatting it in LibreOffice or whatever, don't bother. Just send it to me as a text file, or like you would write an email in text format, and just send it to me.
Okay. And then if we add the music, that's to be noted in the show notes. Is that something that the system automatically recognizes and deals with or doesn't deal with, or is that done manually?
Right now, hold on 1 second. So right now, when you upload your show, you are asked at the top to say, give your host name and email address.
Yep.
You're the title of your show. Your desired slot, which can be the next available slot, or a date, or an episode number, or backup show, I don't care. The next line is, has the intro been added, yes or no? And then we have series tags, and is it explicit or clean? Then you have a Twitter summary, you have sample show notes, and then plain text show notes. Then your regular show notes, yeah? And it's the same for the sample show notes.txt file. So, what that means is then I can just look at the uploaded text file, and then I go, okay, I don't need to add the intro, and I can just compile it with or without the intro right there. And that. And then what we're going to do then we're going to modify the script, because we now know the episode number and we know the date that it's going to be released. We're going to burn that into the tags as well. And we can also post it as that show to archive.org, a WAV file of the show. So we take the show and we add the intro and outro from the FLAC, and we produce a mezzanine WAV file. And from the WAV file, we produce the MP3, OGG, and Speaks, and potentially opus file later on. And then we have the mezzanine file, which that WAV file, which is the complete show, we can then send to archive.org. We've just been working on proof of concept to get that working from a script, which kind of works. And once that's gone, then we can remove the FLAC and whatever. We copy the processed, you know, feed files over to the server, and then we go and we post the show right there and then, but we give it the date and the episode number. So the regular feed, and when you go to the main website, it just filters everything in the past. So today or in the past is just shown, but everything else is available.
Got it.
Clear? Which explains why it's going to be very difficult to change a show with somebody, because it's not going to be easy to slot in a show. Oh, I need to put a show out on Monday, move everybody down one, because all those shows have already been gone. So everything on the calendar right now, if you look at the calendar, we see 1, 2, 3, 4 shows in there. five shows in their already scheduled. Those numbers are allocated, so I can't bump everybody down one because those are already done. And it also means that I no longer need to come out, think about it every day. The show just comes out. I actually hear the show way after everybody else does because I know Dave is monitoring it and will email me if there's any problems.
Nice.
So actually, I had a few days off where I was working on the website, and the structure of the database needed to be changed in order to facilitate this, because I needed to change all the queries to put in a now or in the past query on everything, and needed to change the auto indexing of the database tables. And I also needed to change all the forms and all the everything that we used to post the shows so that they would pick the correct dates and find the next available slot and that sort of thing for the automation that is coming. And my 3 days of vacation, well, not vacation time, it was like time in lieu, came up. And then that's as far as I got. So I was working on the FTP uploader, so that is in the process. So the whole plan here will be you do the FTP upload thing, you'll fill in the required fields for that form. You'll attach your FLAC. You'll say, yes, it's clean. Yes, I've got the intro and outro. The title is My Wonderful Show. The show notes are this. Here's a list of the links. And you press send. It'll upload it. Then the script will check for new uploads. It'll find that. It'll see in the XML file that your web form has turned into. Yes, the show notes, the intro has been added, so I won't add the intro. It'll compile it and place it in a holding area. Then it'll email the admins. The admins will have a listen to it and then approve it. You know, listen to it for, not from an editorial point of view, listen to it for a is this spam point of view. And quality control, of course. And then if they get to go, if we click on the OK link or whatever, then it'll be posted to HPR. The entry will be added to the HPR database. It'll be posted to archive.org, and then the source files will be deleted because they're on archive.org and the derived files are available on the HPR website. Will it be? Job done. And then I intend to have a script that will monitor the queue, determine how many shows are left in the queue, and start emailing people if we start at the beginning of a week, have a week where there are free slots, like next week, for instance. So doing the bugging people for shows thing that I'm doing. Because it's not me anymore that's filling up the queue. It is everybody else is filling up the queue.
Must be a little bit of a relief for you.
Well, it never was me filling up the queue. It never was me scheduling anything because we had the scheduling rules. So I was just following the scheduling rules. But this is much, much simpler. Somebody uploads the show and they say, I want episode 1292. Boom. So they upload three shows. I want it on this Monday. I want it on the following Monday and on the following Monday. And then those slots, if they're available, are allocated. Job done. And then all we need to do is fill in the, if people upload first available slot, then the chances are you will actually, you know, be filling in the cracks in the schedule as opposed to, you know, particular time. So I think it'll be nice for, like, Ahuka has released a lot of shows and they're all spaced out. Klaatu tends to release shows in batches, which we can release out, and then that still leaves free slots for people to fall between the cracks, so to speak.
Now, where may I download the links to the intro outro?
They are in the sample show notes. There's, and on contribute, you'll see a link.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
So on the sample show notes, you'll see intro and outro. And they're in HPR, hackerpublicradio.org/media, and then theme music, intro. And you don't have to pick the two that's there. You can use whichever ones. I'm thinking of making those links random ones, you know, that people have submitted. But that's entirely nice to have. Some way of more important things like getting the FTP upload working.
So I'm still not in trouble for using the alternate music?
No. I think it's cool. You can use whatever you want.
I do too. I love that music.
I think Klaatu has a point about the intro. the intro should still be the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da one. But, you know, you can feel free to truncate it down to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, the first bar of it, and then, you know, you don't have to put in the full 2 minutes of there. The only thing you do have to do is tell me if you put the intro and outro in it, because certain people like to put the outro three quarters of the way in and then put the outtakes behind, not pointing at any other people.
Those bastages.
Hit them. But if they put a show intro and outro added yes in the show notes, I'll forgive them.
I did that. I did that last time.
Yeah, you do, you do, you do. Thanks.
Wasn't my fault I had to put that conversation after the outro. It happened after we ended. What else was I supposed to do?
Exactly, yeah. No, I could have listened to that. You could have gone on and on and on listening to that.
I could have gone on and on and on talking with him.
So is that clear for everybody? Everyone's happy? No thingies?
The only thing that I'm failing to see on the calendar page is is there a queue for shows that are going to automatically fill in these available spaces, or are we going to be missing days here?
Yes, we're missing days here.
Oh, holy shit. All right, well, I'm editing because I've got three recorded.
And that is exactly the point. This is the view of the world that I have had in my head, because this is how I've seen the HPR calendar.
Oh, yeah, me too. I've you been know, scared
because
of it too.
You'll see now that there's... This is something I am working on right now. So hackerpublicradio.org/stats.php. And it's best if you view source, because it's actually a text file. This page is something I'm working on for two reasons. One is that people are going to events and conferences and stuff and want to know, you know, some stats from HPR. A lot of it is, you know, when did it start? It started 7 years, 6 months, 22 years ago. It was renamed to HPR 5 years, 3 months, and 29 days ago. There's a total of 16,085 shows in total, of which 300 are Today with a Techie shows, and 1,385 are Hacker Public Radio shows. There are 190 HPR hosts. There are three days until the next free slot. There are three hosts in the queue, and there are 12 shows in the queue. Now, this is if you look at the calendar as it stands now, we have a free slot on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Yet we have 12 shows in the queue. So this is what has thrown people, I think, a lot about, you know, the whole queuing system and the argument about it. So the point is now, Ahuka shows are slotted in every 2 weeks. They go on for, I don't know, until December, every 2 weeks. But that leaves lots of slots for other people to take up the slack. Now, Ahuka has said, yes, that you will contribute shows if nobody else does, but, you know, additional shows on top of that. But it's time for people to, you know, start contributing shows.
It is, but there's no link on the calendar page here to see the shows that are in the... What did we call it? The failover queue, or I don't know what we called it.
Not at the minute, but I mean that can be put there. I limited the number of weeks here just to make it readable. So
yeah, of course,
it goes on and on. It goes on down to December, and I didn't really need to put it to December to give you the idea that there's on a Friday there's a LibreOffice episode, then there's a week of available slots. Almost a week of available slots, and then another LibreOffice episode. So, kind of, there's no rules now. We used to have rules like the new hosts are bumped, but that's not going to happen anymore. We used to have a rule where there was community news would go out the first Monday of the week. That's not happening anymore. We had a rule where slots were reserved for an event. That's not going to happen anymore. And we had like Talk Eat Me News and whatever, and Linux in the Shell, they will need to be all slotted manually by people. So for Linux in the Shell, I guess Dan can just kind of skip up 2 weeks and then find an available Tuesday and then pop it in there, you know, just record a buffer of shows and then release them as he's ready, and that should take care of him. Keep to Me News might be a little bit more, might have a bit of a delay there. Make sense?
Yeah, yes.
Sounds so good. Despite having 12 shows in the queue, we are in trouble because we have three free slots next week.
Since it's not here on the page, and I am curious, what is the reserve queue look like?
I think it's, I don't know. Hold on 1 second. Talk among yourselves.
Well, if we're talking among ourselves, welcome back, Morgellon. I've missed you, man.
You owe me a show.
Hey, it's nice to be back. Missed everybody.
How was your, was it an Arduino-powered garden waterer? Is that what it was? How's that doing?
It got about halfway done, and then life happened. So, but yeah, things are better now. So I expect to be working on projects and stuff again. So, but yeah, I have at least two HPRs lined out, and probably a third. I've been on this big Android kick here recently, and I've been trying to do as much as I can on my Android devices. So, like, I've downloaded some audio recording software and blah, blah, blah. So we'll see if I can do a full podcast and edit and all that on an Android device. And I'll probably do a show and share the results of that experiment as well. So maybe that'll make a third one.
Cool. That is awesome. Adding you to my invisible You Owe Me a Show list.
That's cool.
We have six backup shows.
Okay. All right.
So at the rate we're going, we would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We'd be out by Thursday week. So nobody should get complacent. Especially over the summer, it gets really, really hard to fill these slots.
Yeah, if they were on this calendar page, Ken, I'd like to request just a, you know, maybe even just a single line that just says we have X number of backup shows.
Why would that affect anything?
Because I think people look at this page and just assume that there are backup shows to fill in here because we've discussed it. But if people know the real number, then they can say, oh, we are in trouble and it is my turn to step up.
Yeah.
But I'm one of those people.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I would have. Yeah, but I weigh that against the people.
That's what got me here.
I weigh that up against the people who look at the calendar and go, oh, there are no backup shows. This is it. Because I'd hate for the backup shows to be a crutch in any way. I would prefer to schedule them now and just let the dice fall where they may. Because with the backup shows, I'm still retaining some sort of, you know, funky Ken can save us feeling. And it would just be better to display the calendar as it is. This is what it is. There are no backups. These are the shows.
Yeah. All right. So, listeners, we are in dire straits. Please send in your shows. Like I said, I have three recorded, but it takes me forever to edit. So don't count on my three until you hear them.
There you go. The only other thing I'm considering doing now is I was talking to Nido today, and he's going to be at. We are doing the official press conferencing as Observe Make Hack, which is a large every 4 years event here in the Netherlands, a big hacking scene thing, and we're going to be official press for that, and we're getting a daily FM radio slot to broadcast an hour of content, an hour of discussion, an hour of interviews or whatever, where we will be interviewing people in that. Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that yet, but anyway, we're too late now because I don't edit. Sorry, Nido. And he has requested me that, okay, for reserve a slot for that event. But in line with what we're saying is, well, we don't reserve slots anymore. So that is a bit of a problem.
What's the website for that event?
Hold on 1 second.
Okay, so it's Observe Hack Make.
OHM2013.org.
Okay, cool. I can't wait to hear those shows. That sounds like the coolest thing. I'm not happy to be missing that.
The last time I went camping, I had a back hernia and had to go through surgery. So I am not looking forward to camping.
Oh, geez, man. Get a cot or an inflatable mattress or something.
No, they don't work. An inflatable mattress, I end up lying on the cold floor in a fucking cloud of, you know, where it's leaked and the whole thing is around me and I can't get out because it's like this fluffy cloud that's enveloped me. Or a cot, they invariably have this center rim thing that's halfway down the tent. Anyway, I hate them. I'll probably stay at a hotel and just you'll roll around in the mud before I come out to pretend I'm roughing it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, don't hurt yourself. I was, if you were going to sleep in a field, I was, you know, was saying get something. I don't know. I prefer the inflatable mattresses, but they are, it's not wise to rely on them. You should always have like a camping mat with you and maybe even use it on top of the mattress.
Okay, I think we've talked this to death. Shall we move on?
Sure.
So, other stuff that was on the mailing list, which I still haven't gotten around to putting on to somewhere that everybody can see, has been a large discussion about the Opus Flakfield, discussing the Opus and one Flakfield instead, which I think was proposed by Epicanus, but just so everybody knows, there is no we're not going to be having a flak feed on at least the HPR website because the amount of everything that would consume is just enormous.
Yeah, that was a crazy idea when you consider that someone's paying for the storage space and bandwidth. Not that it's it's a nice idea if someone wants to use the stuff, but yeah, difficult to pull off.
I think a happy compromise now is that we will put the WAV file up on to archive.org, and anyone who wants to run their own FLAC file or run a feed of that can do so. Can get the original source with the intro and outro from archive.org. There was also discussion of whether we would move to a single Opus feed. I think Deep Geek and again Epicanus were working on that, and I'm not sure. The only one constraint that they seem to be thinking was that there was the file size, and that is the very reason that I have the speaks there at all, is because of the file size. There are people who are on very, very low bandwidth connections and can get a speaks file where they can't get a OGG file, so that is of prime importance to me, maintaining that.
Yeah, I like the idea. I don't know if the world is ready for Opus, but somebody's got to lead the way.
I'd love to do it, not a problem, but it's hard for me to sell that to Stank and Josh, you know, who are paying the cash every month. Well, we've got an MP3 feed because, yeah, we have to have an MP3 feed. We've got a speaks feed because there are people on low bandwidth. Okay, it's small enough that we can suffer it. All right, put on this free codec, which we've got is called OGG. Okay, we'll do that because we support freedom. Oh, and now there's a better free codec. Okay, good. You know, and so it's just a hard sell to add 20 gigabytes of data and, you know, to the thing when we already have a free codec. But yeah. It's a discussion, and that's fine. If at a certain point the mailing list decides that everybody can handle Opus, then I would suggest I suggest now that if the low quality speaks feed can handle Opus files, if those people who are listening on the speaks feed can handle Opus, where the file size will not increase, then we could switch to Opus there. And then at a point when everybody feels that everybody listening on OGG can support Opus as well, then we should perhaps switch to that as well.
That's not a bad plan.
I think, yeah, it's as practical as we can get for now. Maybe in a few years, the file size won't be that big. Then we had somebody suggesting BitTorrent Sync for HPR. Pokey, convince me of this.
Well, I don't know if I was trying to convince anybody of anything. I was just thinking about it as an idea because one of the ways that BitTorrent Sync can operate is what they call, I believe they're calling it a one-way sync. And basically what it means is only one of the peers on the sync is allowed to write to the sync to add files or remove files. And then every other peer on the network or on the torrent then is just sharing bandwidth and really just bandwidth is the only advantage. And it just seems like a neat way to get around having so much bandwidth piped out of the main server if we, just picked one particular thing and stuck it on there. And it just sounded like it would save some bandwidth.
You finished? Are you talking to somebody else?
No, I just got a call. I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to this when Puck is back. Then we had several discussions, people requesting passwords, and me asking for sanity checks for the HPR site because we did an upload. I also got permission from the from Stank and Josh to upload the to increase the upload size on the HPR website to half a gigabyte, which will allow us to upload pretty much every show that we've had since high quality shows have been delivered to us. So 512 meg has been pretty much normal, would encompass normal size. And if you want to go higher than that, then we can do it via FTP or we can do it some other way as well. So that was one of the major stumbling blocks blocking the continuation of the upload form. More discussions about high priority shows and stuff, and about whether shows could be reserved, which they can't be anymore. And that's pretty much it. Anyone else got anything?
Nothing here.
I actually wanted to talk to Pokey about the BitTorrent.
Back, sorry.
Okay, cool. Perfect timing. We were just finishing off the what's on the mailing list, and I wanted to talk to you about the BitTorrent and give. I don't know if it's ever been if I've ever explained it to people or why ISPs hate BitTorrent so much. Would you like a quick 5 minutes on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I understand why ISPs hate BitTorrent, and basically the clients don't understand the distance involved with the peers that they're sharing with. I get yep. that. Go ahead.
Okay, it's just for people, how the internet works, if you look at a diagram in a university, I guess, is you've got your local ISPs and they connect to a national ISP, and the national ISP will connect to a regional ISP, and the regional ISP will connect to a global ISP. And this is how traffic theoretically is spread around the internet. But what actually happens is two local ISPs in a town, for instance, will run a cable between each other's head end, and they will go, well, if your users are usually mailing my users, so we'll put this cable in between, and we'll pay for our router and you pay for your router, and we'll share the price of that interconnection, because that means we cut out the guy in the national level. We don't have to talk to the regional ISP. And then that happens up and up and up and up the chain. What also happens with people like Netflix, for instance, they started using a lot of bandwidth, and now what they're doing is they're putting file servers into the ISP's data centers, so that when you go watch a Netflix movie, it is distributed one time over the more expensive line. Oh, and I want to tell you that each of those lines, the further up the tree you go, the more expensive they are, and it gets into serious money now, folks. Really, really serious money. The higher up you go on the tree. And another thing you should know is that a local ISP is paying the same amount of traffic, same amount of money for no matter how much traffic you send off over their local network. It doesn't matter how much you send. If you saturate the line completely, it's costing the exact same amount, because a one and a zero, if it's a whole go of ones going across the line, if nothing's going across the line, they're paying to transmit zeros. If there's loads of stuff going online, they're paying to transmit ones and zeros. In actual fact, so most of the time it's zeros. So they're still paying the data centers. They're still running the switches. They're still running the servers. They're still running the lines. There's no saving that can be made. So they are quite happy for you to be sharing stuff among their users as much as you like, which is why if they're doing telephony, they'll give you telephony between your local subscribers for free, because they're paying for it anyway. They're not being charged at all by anybody else, and they will include that on the one fee. So they want to keep the network within their network as much as possible. If they can't do that, they will attempt to keep it within their peered network as much as possible, because they're going, okay, we'll send it over this pipe. And there's loads and loads of people specialized at making peering deals. So sometimes somebody will, a smaller ISP will need to pay more money to the bigger ISP because of the amount of traffic that's going across. Then you have caching. This is why they love mail servers, NewsNet. And NewsNet comes in once, it's stored on their server, and then sent all the requests go locally over the network. This is why, up until BitTorrent came out, the movie industry had no foothold whatsoever in getting the ISPs to do anything about illegal movies, because it was in their interest to have as the best news servers possible, because people would take these news servers and the new movie would come out, it would come one time into their news server, and then all their users would subscribe from that, costing them nothing. So then BitTorrent comes out, and the idea of BitTorrent is a swarm comes up, it becomes available, and everybody shares tiny little components. And even if you're running a site, if you're downloading on a Raspberry Pi and you've got a 250, you've got a, you know, a dial-up connection, portions of that component are coming to you. But BitTorrent is completely and totally network unaware, or at least was when it started off. That's changed a little now, but at least it was starting off completely and totally unaware. So you might be pulling down portions of that file over a 3G connection that's costing them money, because definitely on 3G connections, they are losing money if you are transmitting. They are losing money if you are transmitting, because it does cost them money to transmit. If you're not transmitting, then it doesn't cost them money. That's the one exception. So they don't want you sending stuff over 3G or over mobile. And then what happens is you have this file from all over the world, all coming through tier one connections, and it's costing them a bomb. And every single copy of that file is costing them a bomb, because it's still coming from, you know, Chuck, whoever, who's sitting out in the 3G connection in the middle of Kansas, is sending that file over a tier one connection. It's coming across the Atlantic, and then suddenly everybody has it, and then it can be shared by everybody. But it really, really is expensive, which is why they have a complete lockdown and they completely hate BitTorrent. From a HPR point of view, if somebody downloads a show once, what happens is it goes through a caching server. It will hit their network one time, and then the next person who makes a request, it'll go into the caching server. Caching server will ask HPR, has this file been updated since I was here last? And that will then, they will reply, no, it hasn't. And then the cache will be sent back down to the local client. And that pretty much explains that. But the Netflix thing, was that clear, that Netflix puts servers into local networks so that they can serve their movies from there?
Yeah, a CDN, a content distribution network.
Okay, so that's pretty much why ISPs hate BitTorrent.
Yeah, that's why ISPs hate BitTorrent. But is there any advantage to Hacker Public Radio using one?
I would have no problem whatsoever, but with HPR using one, because we don't care about stats, to be honest. But what I would see no reason then why not to use just a regular seeding server and just do regular BitTorrent. Other than the fact that ISPs, whatever they say, they block BitTorrent traffic, they rate limit it, and they treat you as a suspect user if they find you using it. Which I'll admit is horrible, seeing as the internet should be open and all the rest.
Yeah, yeah. No, the only reason that I don't know. I'm not sure. I've for a long time I've just felt like there has to be some way to integrate BitTorrent, the technology, with feeds. You know what I mean? Just to make the distribution more accessible. And easier to do. And I can't really see a way around it. It'd be nice if, you know, they were like a, you know, like BitTorrent Sync, for instance, is what I was thinking. If that were the building block that started it, you know, you'd then have like a local copy of HPR, of everything, every show on that server, at least in the format you wanted. And you could then, you know, have a script running at home to build your own little RSS feed and handle your podcatcher that way or something. Just something to make distribution more accessible. But, I mean, I understand there's a lot of roadblocks.
Because the issue with the we could put an a server up, and but we would need to seed every single episode. So you would need to then get the episodes as a, each time it would be a new torrent that would come in associated with the episode. Whereas what you're
with normal BitTorrent, yeah,
exactly, yeah. Well, what you're talking about, and now I think I see where you're coming from. It's just the entire repo is distributed via BitTorrent, correct?
Yeah, yeah. The entire maybe it would be the entire repo, or maybe it would be, you know, one repo for AUG, one for Speaks, one for MP3, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I get you.
And maybe the entire repo would make more sense because people would be working together as opposed to fragmenting it. But yeah, and then, you know, HPR could even throttle its upload and let the community do the work. But I don't know. And Borgu One, who's listening in the mumble chat here, is saying you can't select what download you want and which one you don't. And that's kind of the point. You would download the entire repo and you would help seed the entire repo, you know, as a community member.
Yeah, and the cool thing about that was what we could do then is update the, you know, just dump the RSS file. In RSS file that points to the local /hprepisode.mp3 in that repo pool. So essentially the /eps folder on HPR contains all the MP3 files and everything. If we share that out over BitTorrent and then put in a symlink into the latest RSS feed, that RSS feed every time a new show comes out, so at 1 minute past midnight we could dump a new og.rss, mp3.rss with the latest show in there, and that you could plug into your regular RSS reader and it'll pick it up locally. That will work. I like it.
Are you shitting me? I mean, crapping me?
No, that seriously would work, I think. I don't see why it wouldn't. You're basically talking about where I would see this useful, actually, is for the source WAV files. As well as having them on archive.org, I have them here locally on my own PC, and I'm a bit worried that it would, you know, die or something. So what would be cool is if that and all the MP3 files and OGG files and everything were shared by people who have like 1 terabyte, you know, they've got space basically for to host all this stuff. And then the feeds are just it's a simple matter of throwing a little text file in there that has got all the feeds as part of, you know, it's just a wget from itself, from localhost, and dump it into that directory. It'd be easy peasy lemon squeezy.
That's if your BitTorrent sync client is running on the same machine that your RSS client is on, correct?
Yes, but we could. What you could do is put the host name of hackerpublicradio.local, yeah? And then you in your host file, hackerpublicradio.local equals, you know, as an alias to something else.
Okay.
So 172.0.0.1, for instance. Well, sorry, 127.0.0.1 would serve it off localhost if you wanted to do it that way. Or we could simply point it at ./, which, when you serve it out, would possibly fill out the local, you know, if you're serving it from example.com, would possibly fill out example.com for you.
We may have to experiment with this sometime.
It's doable.
I would need someone to walk me through it. I think because I have a machine running full time, but it's not the machine I run my podcatcher on.
Yeah, but on that machine you could run you would sync it to the local network, yeah. Presumably these two machines are on a wired Ethernet connection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so long as you have it in the house, you don't care what protocol you use to get it from one place to the other, yeah?
Correct.
So you could take it from HPR in the swarm, and it, you know, a new WAV file comes down, new MP3 and new Speaks file are torrented down during the day to you, yeah?
Yes.
And then the feed files come in, and you point a web server to that location on your website.
On the machine that's running the BitTorrent.
Yeah, so you've got a NAS or something. You've got a Raspberry Pi with a terabyte disk attached to it. Install Apache on it, and you point it to /hpr/mp3.rss, yeah? And you put that into your reader on your other PC. It will pull it in, and everything in that will be relative to the root of that local Raspberry Pi. So when it goes ./, you know, HPR 1234.mp3, that would be my domain, my local fucking whatever I called it. Sorry, there goes the clean tag. Darn.
Yeah, I already blew it. Don't worry about it.
Then that would just be expanded by Apache out to read, you know, the localhost. This is normal stuff. This isn't rocket science.
No. I know it's not rocket science. I'm just remedial.
No, let's make this happen. Sorry, I completely did not get what you were on about.
Oh, no one ever does. No worries.
Well, that's why it's good that we had this conversation.
All right, cool. If anybody else thinks this is a good idea or a bad idea or sees advantages or disadvantages to this, post it in the show notes in the mailing list, or give it to us in the comments for the show, please.
So would do you envisage this being like the MP3 Aug and Speaks, three different ones, and the WAV file being a different one?
I hadn't thought that far ahead. I was only selfishly thinking of my own Aug feed.
No, you'd like your, but you like the entire Aug feed. Do other people not just delete the files once they're finished?
Well, yeah, I delete it from my MP3 player, and I don't keep it locally. But if this were HPR and I were helping HPR, I would keep it cached, you know, on a separate machine. I wouldn't obviously carry around every episode with me, but for sure, I would, you know, join a torrent that helped to alleviate the bandwidth of HPR.
Why not then have this running for everyone? So one subdirectory is HPR, the other subdirectory is, the Linux Tech Show. The next subdirectory is Ubuntu UK, Linux Outlaws, blah, blah, blah. But you could do them all.
Yeah, for sure, but it's got to start somewhere.
Exactly. Dave.
Hello.
Do you know our LinuxLink .NET script?
Oh, yes.
How's that coming along?
It's not had a great deal of progress since the last time I spoke to you, because summer got in the way. But I'm scheduling it for latest Aug Camp. Ooh. Yeah, to be
Pokey.
Ready by Aug Camp. Yeah, go on.
Porky. What's cool is this LinuxLink, you know Dan's the LinuxLink.net thing page?
With all the
Dan
shows.
Dan von Tils maintains the LinuxLink.net, which is a list of all Linux and tech-related podcasts. And Dave and I have been working as a, you know, handout thingy for, as a handout, are you interested in podcasts? Here's a list of technical podcasts. Oh, have you ever considered doing a list of podcasts? Well, you might try on Hacker Public Radio, that type of opening line. And we found that it was a lot more complicated than it turned out to be. And now we're kind of working on this tool that will go out each, so however often it's run, and look at the health of the Linux podcasting feeds, you know, verifying that the servers are up, verifying that it's readable in with wget, verifying if the server itself is down, reporting that, if the feed is invalid, reporting that, and displaying stuff like the latest episode is blah. So if you're ever there wondering, I have not heard an episode from the linuxlink.net, has that been released this week, that you could go to this place, and then as a service to the community, you could see, oh, there it is there. But as part of that, we could also feed it into, download the episode and put it onto this master repository maker. And then people who are fans of that show could subscribe to that torrent and essentially act as a backup for the community. Cool or not?
Okay, so the back channel discussion that's going on here right now in the chat is we're wondering about file size, and Borgu's asking, or Borgle, I'm not sure.
Why isn't
if I'm
he
supposed
on?
To, I don't know, he's muted. Unmute.
Unmute yourself. Speak! I command you!
So, he's wondering about disk space, and how everybody, you know, who shares in this is going to help with the disk space, and I guess what it boils down to is, you know, right now, I'm pretty sure the Aug feed, the entirety, every show ever in Aug is less than 30 gigabytes right now. It was less than 20 a year ago, or just over 20. And I know that, you know, MP3 is probably, what, is MP3 twice the size, or is it half the quality? Which way are we doing that, Ken?
I think half the quality.
Okay, so then another 30 gig for MP3s. Speaks has got to be half the size, maybe a third of the size, so another 15 gigs for that, and we're still only up to 75 gigs, unless we're going to be sharing the FLAC, which I don't know that we need to do that if archive.org is taking care of that for us. But I mean, yeah. You know, I'm not the arbiter of what we do here. I just, you know, I just suggested the idea and someone could explain to me why it's a good or bad idea.
It's currently at 52 gigs in total, everything.
For all 3 feeds?
Yep, since the beginning of time.
Yeah,
that,
okay.
That does not include the TWAS ones yet.
Yeah, and my thought about this, I mean, I guess the way that my brain sums this up is, at the moment, Josh and Stank are handling that 53 gigabytes. Why can't I?
Yeah, no, it's a
you know, as a community member, I mean, they're running out of a server farm, or not a server farm, excuse me, but they're a host, you know, and we're probably running off a VPN or something, and disk space on a VPN is orders of magnitude more expensive than disk space here at my house. And, you know, granted, every person who participates spends that money over and over again, so, you know, maybe in aggregate, it's not the best way to spend money on storage space. But as far as saving some bandwidth and getting some stuff done, I don't think it costs, you know, everybody too much money. You know what I mean? I'm just rambling and babbling now, aren't I? I didn't make any sense there, did I? No, Ken, we can't hear you. Stop transmitting. No red lips on the screen. Dave, I'm glad you're recording still.
Yes. Belt and braces, eh? So what would it do to the bandwidth of somebody who's got a bandwidth cap, like me, for example? I'd probably not want to participate, or I'd want to trickle feed the data in the first instance. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah, now I'm not sure how BitTorrent Sync works. Yeah, I haven't looked into it yet. It's a separate client from a regular BitTorrent client, and every BitTorrent client's different. But mm-hmm. all of the graphical BitTorrent clients I've ever seen, you can limit your bandwidth independent, upload and download independently. So I imagine that you can limit what you're downloading. You know, your speed, how quickly you're downloading it, and how quickly you're uploading it, and you know, probably need to do some math to figure out how much it's going to cost you over a month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a per month bandwidth cap. So, but if you set it low, so that it, you know, it took that month or maybe 2 months to fill up in the first instance, then that would be doable, I guess.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds interesting. Sounds like an interesting idea.
Yeah, and I know I've never begun seeding a file. You know, I've always just kind of joined into a torrent swarm. But I know that if you're downloading, for instance, an album, you know, that's Creative Commons license, that's legal to download, of course. Mm-hmm. You can, like, there's usually tick boxes, and you can select songs that you, or deselect, they usually come, you know, by default, everything's selected. You can deselect parts of that file that you don't want, and that may also be true with BitTorrent Sync, I don't know.
Yeah, so you could maybe slice off the a period of podcasts, you know, like the last year's worth or something like that, or prioritize them or something of that sort.
Borgu is saying that it does not allow that.
All right, okay.
In BitTorrent Sync.
Okay.
And yeah. All right, yeah. So you'd have to change the whole thing. So then maybe a bandwidth cap within the BitTorrent Sync client is the way around that.
Yeah, sounds doable though. I mean, there's not likely to be too many constraints on it. What sort of outgoing demand would you be likely to get, I wonder?
It isn't much. I've never seen much of a demand on my torrents. Like if I do a Linux ISO or something. I never see more than, I don't know, I don't think I've ever cracked 100 kilobits per second up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I guess most people who have ADSL get quite a low upload rate, don't they, by default? And it's limited to download rate of about, what is it, 20 megabits or something on ADSL?
Oh, that just depends on your service. I mean, what you'd probably want to do, you know, if you're not uploading anything anyway, then but and you're not dealing with caps, then it probably doesn't matter. But if you're dealing with bandwidth caps, or if you have a limited upload rate, you want to go to like speakeasy.net or some such service can measure your bandwidth, you know, how much you download and how much you upload. And for instance, I can upload, I think it was 1.5 megabits per second. So I might want to limit mine to 0.5 so that I have a megabit left over for my other stuff. And you know, if two dozen people around the earth are limiting theirs to, you know, 0.5 up, and just sharing it with everybody that way. And it would be more than that, because, you know, people would you know, subscribe this way and depend on it. So like any torrent, the more people involved, the quicker it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. No, that's good. These are all the sort of questions I guess people have, won't they? They'll say, will it cripple my internet link and so forth?
But the answer is yes. If you let it run off the leash, then yes, it will.
But you can control it.
I believe you can. I'm not, like I said, I'm not entirely certain with the specifics on BitTorrent Sync. Borgu is saying that yes, you can. I know that on a regular BitTorrent, every client that I know of, you can limit download and upload speed.
Yeah.
And Borgu's verifying that as well, or seconding that.
Yeah, it sounds good. And a lot of people who listen to and contribute to HBR do so because they want to be a member of that community, and there's another way of being a member of the community, isn't it?
Exactly. It would be a very it would feel very satisfying to be a member that way personally. Mm.
Yeah. I like the sound of it.
And most BitTorrent clients also will, and again, I don't know what BitTorrent Sync, because it's a slightly different protocol, and it's still brand new. But most other BitTorrent clients will track your ratio, what's called ratio, and it's your ratio of downloaded data to uploaded data. And you can watch that ratio climb, you know, once you have all the files and you're sharing about that way. You can just watch it go up.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. So where do we go from here then? Kick the idea around a bit and see where it goes.
Yeah, I think so. See what happens.
Yeah, good. Okay, so Ken's disappeared off the face of Bumble.
Yeah, I know. Oh man, Borgu, you're running BitTorrent Sync. Yeah, it is still in beta. Exactly, still in beta. It's not on Debian Current yet. There's though I believe there is a repo. What do they call PPE? A PPA, Personal Package Archive. There is a PPA for BitTorrent Sync, but it is still in beta. That is true. So maybe we I don't know, experiment with it, but don't rely on it just yet until it settles down a little. Yeah, that's what Borgu is suggesting. Borgu, am I supposed to pronounce the one as an L? Is it Borgu or Borgul? Nope, just Borgu. Okay, thanks, man. So I'm going to try and drag Ken back in here. All right, Ken, can you speak yet?
Sort of.
Hey, I can hear you.
Skype on my Fedora 19 box just blew me out of the water. Don't know why it even was running, but there you go.
Nice. Thanks, Microsoft.
Anyway, where are we?
We're basically just discussing limiting bandwidth within the BitTorrent Sync client so that it doesn't kill somebody's bandwidth cap through their ISP. We said that Borgu verified that you can do that at the moment, but cautioned us that BitTorrent Sync is still in beta, and some of the updates lately have broken the syncs, and some syncs had to be some updates broke the old shared folders and they had to be resynced.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say about this is, for your functionality, if you wanted to help HBR out by having a copy of that, we could equally do this by putting an rsync server in where you could rsync down the changes. And that's what that would do, is force everything to come from the central server, which I don't know if it's fine. But you see, I'm struggling with this because serving everything from HPR, the bandwidth is not the problem. Having it in the only one central location is a little bit worrying. not having it copied in multiple places is also a little bit worrying. So it depends on the problem we're trying to solve.
Well, it will not. BitTorrent Sync is not a backup, because if something happens to that original file, I think that it would, you know, like if something gets deleted from that primary resource, then it gets deleted from everywhere. So I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's backup plan number one. It's only bandwidth plan.
I'm actually thinking, okay, if we did an rsync end client thing, I don't know if that's even possible publicly to do a public rsync down, because that's very efficient and there's always one way, so it only ever gets added. The only time you would delete anything on your end would be if the show got overwritten or got updated in some way. Anyway, this is something for the mail list. The show's run long enough.
Yeah, okay. We can let it die.
No. I find
no, not, no, not the idea. I meant the episode.
Yep. Anyone else got anything to add? Okay, then. Join me in singing the free software song.
Join us now and share the software. I was singing the other version with the guitars.
I'm thinking we should all sing the Open Source Musicians podcast theme. Is actually a nicer song.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember it, though. It's been a while.
Well, freedom! You know freedom when it's free. You know freedom. It's just for me.
Why don't we just say goodbye?
Okay, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of...
Hacker
Public
Radio!
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.